Hello, and welcome to Choral Connectivity, a people-first approach to singing, Season 2. Through this podcast, we explore the meaningful ways that teaching singing can affect human nature, discuss teaching philosophies, and celebrate amazing stories of people who are doing incredible and meaningful work in the choral field. I'm your host, Kirsten Oberoi, and I'm here to help inspire you. You, the teacher, you, the singer, you, the educator, you, the conductor, whoever you are, these weekly episodes will help you remember that each voice is totally unique, and the story behind each person who is singing with you is incredibly valuable and important to this world. Before we dive in with open arms and hearts to today's episode, I want to remind you that you can always reach me on the Choral Connectivity Facebook page, Instagram, or website. Let's see how we can change the world of choral music just a little bit more today. Hello and welcome to Thursday and a nice new episode of Choral Connectivity, a people first approach to singing. Today's episode features my friend and middle school choral director from Virginia, Eric Jacobs. And Eric and I met through a mutual friend, Leanna Salinas, who was on the show. Go back, listen to her podcast episode a few episodes back. But we met at Nationals and just immediately sort of became friends. And there is so much gold in this episode. And what I love about this episode is it's just like chock full of stories. So if you are somebody that really likes examples and stories and smiles, Eric is the person to listen to. Thank you so much for listening. And I really hope that you are enjoying this spring weather. It's so lovely when the sun is shining, warmth is happening. My friends, it is springtime. I hope your March was good. My March was absolutely insane and crazy and so busy, but I'm so glad to be back here with you and doing new episodes and talking to more people. If you're like, oh, I've got an idea, I know who she should talk to, or I really want to talk to her, I am not pretentious about this. If you email me and you're like, I really want to be on your show and I think I have something awesome to say, let's do the thing. That's what I'm here for. So enjoy this episode with my dear friend, Eric Jacobs, and yeah, enjoy, which I said 75,000 times. I need a coffee.
Recording.
Absolutely recording.
Oh my gosh, we're doing this finally.
We're doing it. And I'm so excited. listeners, welcome to the show today. I am so excited. Sometimes, every once in a while, when you go to a conference, you randomly are walking outside in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Leanna Salinas comes up and is walking with someone you don't know and goes, wait, you should know each other. And then you go, you want to go get a drink immediately? And the person goes, yes, and welcome.
Heck yeah.
Eric, to the show. I am so excited to have you here today, and new friendship, new collegiality, and just, you know, a small world and fun connection. But welcome to the show. Welcome to Choral Connectivity. So glad to have you. Why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners who you are and where you music?
Hi, everybody. I'm Eric Jacobs, and I'm just a guy that likes to stand outside of convention centers and hope that something happens, you know? I'm a middle school choir director in Northern Virginia. It's gorgeous here. I'm on spring break. I'm light as a feather right now, baby. We got buds on the trees, and it's just gorgeous, so I'm in a good mood. But my day job is middle school choir directing, which I've done for 10-ish years. I'm an instrumentalist. I'm a trombone player who's turned to choral music because at first I loved the challenge and I stayed because I don't know, there's something magical about it. And I'm also starting up a youth, nonprofit youth choir like Kirsten has. And that's kind of what we bonded over and what Leanna knew we would have a lot to talk about. And that's it, I think, for now. Did I cover the bases?
I think you did. And super exciting. I'm also very excited about the the springtime. It's supposed to get to 80 degrees today here. And it's like out of control because it was super nice 2 days ago. And then yesterday was super cold. And now it's going to be super nice again. So I'm very excited. I'm also currently puppy sitting my friend's dog.
And so puppy.
I have three golden retrievers running around. So it's just like springtime and yard time. And so great.
Oh, yeah.
So, Eric, tell us a little bit about your story. Where did you grow up? How did you get interested in music? How did you start teaching music? What were some inspirations for you? Just give us the whole Eric Jacobs story.
The Eric Jacobs story. grew up in Fort Myers, Florida, Southwest Florida, and I didn't realize how lucky I was until years and years and years later to have grown up in that environment, because at the time in Florida, if all these retired musicians that could still, in the golden age of the Count Basie orchestras and the Union orchestras and in Las Vegas, all these guys and gals were retiring and moving down to Florida, and they wanted to keep up their chops. And so they would start community bands and jazz bands. And then I was just some, you know, punk kid trombone player who got to reap the benefits of playing in all of these community groups, and just grew up around music, was a hardcore band nerd, marching band, drum major, drum corps. After high school, ended up going to the Marines. I was in the Marine band in New Orleans for 4 years. And after my time in the Marine Corps, I moved back to Florida and I kind of freelanced for a little bit, and then finally decided I needed to go get a degree. So I went to the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York, where I got
much
my degree.
Colder.
It's very different. Actually, I say about living in Virginia that living in Florida growing up and then moving to Rochester has prepared me for this very mild climate where it does get hot, but never too hot. It does get cold, but never too cold. An inch of snow gives me 3 days off of school. It's glorious. I did Eastman for, you know, a number of years and started up a couple of my own music projects. I was a really passionate trad jazz guy. And then also had an all trombone funk rock band called the Po' Boys Brass Band. And we like plugged our trombones into distortion pedals and played Led Zeppelin.
God, that's amazing.
And then after that ended up moving to DC, the DC area, to start my teaching career. And of course, just knew I was going to be the next great band director. But ended up taking a job teaching choir. Kind of fell into that one thinking I was going to prove my mettle after a year and move on. But found that I really liked the challenge. My first job in choir was middle school, kind of like a program that had been neglected for a number of years. And I felt like nobody was giving me much of a chance. It's like, oh, this is an instrumental guy. He got hired late. He's coming in. And I remember one day I had 75 seventh grade treble kids in the room, and they were just swinging from the ceilings,
sure,
like just being cray cray. And my music supervisor walked in on a surprise visit, and she just goes, "How are you doing?" And I love that kind of stuff, because you actually, Kirsten, on your social stuff the other day, you had a sweater that you kind of
like shared. Yes, I was literally just going to say that.
Yeah, like underestimate me, that'll be fun. My big thing is tell me what can't be done and I'll show you what can. So I loved that nobody was really expecting the kids to do much. Nobody was expecting me to do much. Mm-hmm. And those kids and I, it was such a fun challenge to learn how to be, you know, decent at this job. And it's something that I've been doing now for 10 years. So yeah, I haven't left.
I love that. And your current post is middle school.
Yes.
And what does your program look like?
I teach at Willard Middle School in Loudoun County Public Schools, which is like the northwestern part of Virginia, right outside of DC, the Dulles International Airport area. It's a large program. We have over 400 singers in 6 different choirs. We're very lucky to be in the area we're in. It's kind of a booming population area. DC is never short of people. I've been at this school now for 3 years. Before that, I was in another school in this county for a number of years. That's kind of the makeup of the program.
Love that. So, so cool. So 400 singers in middle school sounds like a blast. In terms of your population, you know, how does that look? Because when you have 400 singers at a school, my presumption is not that you have 400 die-hard choral nerds, but you've got a good amount of the school, and my guess would be a pretty diverse population.
Yes, so the way Loudoun County Public Schools does it at the middle school level is, I believe music is a requirement in 6th grade. All kids have to be involved in some kind of a music program. But then after that, they don't. You're right. It's a y'all come choir, right? So anybody at any level, especially in middle school chorus, it's the one music elective that an 8th grader can come to my program the first year having never sung, haven't never done any of that. So the whole program itself is just everybody's welcome at any age. Lots of diversity. And yeah, I mean, it's middle school, right? It's a challenge, but the challenge, I think, is mitigated by relationship building. I mean, I really feel, especially at the middle school level, that my first and my big priority is to build relationships with these kids. And so you'll get a lot of kids. I actually just had a kid maybe a month ago who it's deep into quarter three, 7th grade, gets dropped into my tenor bass choir, and he's never sang ever in his life. And I asked him, I said, hey, so tell me why you chose choir. I didn't. have you ever sang before?
So classic.
Right. Have you ever sang before? Nope. Is there anything you're excited about being in choir? Nope.
Nope.
And so again, tell me what can't be done. Show, and I'll show you what can. I feel like I'm like, okay, challenge accepted, buddy. Let's go. And now he's a fully, like indoctrinated member into the craziness of what we do, and he sings the loudest, which can be a problem sometimes, but we love it.
that's amazing and so important. You know, I think sometimes people see really big programs, right, with lots and lots of numbers, and they think, you know, oh, okay, like you must have choice, or the kids, like, we actually have to teach a lot of people that are not bought in yet. Mm-hmm. And that's an important part of relationship building, because
yes,
they don't care about what you know until they know you care. That's right. Just 100% true. And you know, you think that's not true, like, fight me. And it's really important. You know, I've been thinking about this message that I got last night from a current student of mine who's a junior, just a student that I just absolutely adore. We don't have favorites, but this one's my favorite, right? but we don't have favorites, but this one's my favorite. And they wrote to me because they had been talking to another student who was in 8th grade chorus the year that I taught middle school. The years that I taught middle school was in the same 8th grade chorus. And this kid that they were talking to was great. I really enjoyed him. He didn't end up going on to high school music. You know, he quit. He did sports once he got to high school, you know, the whole 9 yards. I was always a little disappointed by that, but you know, kind of you move on and you go with the kids who are going to continue. And, you know, when my current student was talking to this student, he said, she made middle school great.
There it is.
And I got that message last night, and I haven't stopped thinking about it, because that's the important part. The important part is not that that student went on to continue to do High School Music. That important part is that when that kid looks back on his middle school experience, he's thinking to himself, you know, my chorus teacher was awesome. And you don't know, give it another 8 to 10 years. And that kid has a kid. And that kid goes to school and says, I could maybe try chorus. And what is that kid who's now a parent going to say? You know, it gives back in different ways, and it's important. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, that relationship building, and good on you for not writing off a kid. One of my biggest pet peeves is when people say, oh, that kid's just here because their friend is here.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, that's a cry for community.
Right. Well, you really touched on a vein that I think you and I bonded over when we had a chance to chat in
chat where and were day we? Drink.
Yeah, and the day drinking.
So much.
But so okay, I want to tell you a little story. My first day in my first education class, like intro to ed that everybody has to take in school, my professor got on the board and he said, okay. And this is like the height of the recession, right? So this is where all the teachers are getting laid off. And one of the things he said, okay, we're going to write on the board. You're in an interview and your principal says, hey, why should I invest money in you as a teacher and not put it somewhere else? Mm-hmm. What's the value of a music education? And the kids all got up to the board and they wrote, it's where we meet friends. It's helps with math scores. It, you know, whatever, all this extrinsic stuff, right? And then he came to the board and he said, literally all of these things you just mentioned and could be gotten from somewhere else, right? I can learn discipline in ROTC. I can have friends in a social club. I could do all this. But really the intrinsic value of music education is how you keep a job. And for the first half of my career so far, I was very intrinsically motivated by music. I wanted to be, and I still am. I'm a very passionate music literacy guy, right? But what I actually learned is that the extrinsic value of my kids' time in class means more to the kid than the intrinsic. And that if I don't address why the kid comes to my class, I can't get them hooked on why I want them to be in my class. And so I would actually argue, at least at the middle school level, because I kind of pride myself on being a middle school expert guy.
Sure.
I feel like the extrinsic is so much more valuable to kids and to community. You've got to build community and build that buy-in, right? So 3 years ago when I came to this new school, we were virtual. And it kind of blew all my plans out of the water for how I was going to build a community because the kids don't know me. I don't know them. And now over this thing that we're doing right now, this Zoom thing, right. I had to build relationships with these kids. And so I had to really change how I did things because I couldn't replicate what I did in a classroom. But what did that year look like? Was I making them do sight reading examples and like all that? I was making silly videos and getting the kids hyped and excited to get back in a choir classroom so that when they were in the choir classroom and I had their attention, and I had their buy-in, I could teach them the things that I needed to teach them. So anyway, that's a long-winded story for saying that the older I get, the more extrinsic matters to me than intrinsic, really.
I mean, the truth of the matter is kids can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Kids can do anything. Like the actual doing of the music part is, you know, if you're teaching well, it's not that hard. If you're picking good repertoire that is right for the humans in front of you, it's not that hard. Like the teaching part is not that hard. It's the other part that's harder. It's the other part that's harder. And if you are so incredibly focused on that music teaching, or if you are picking repertoire that is so hard that every single second of your rehearsal has to be, oh, yes, we have to be professional and we have to sit up tall and we have to make sure that you're quiet at every moment, that you are not actively creating music. That's not going to do the thing for you. And actually, they're not going to be as good at the music part.
Yes.
You know, I totally agree with you there. And
Yeah, I mean, it's a lesson that we all have to learn as choir directors to program for the choir in front of you and not the choir you wish you had. And I've done that many times.
We all have.
Right. It's just part of the learning process. But I mean, yeah, I mean, you're so right about the music part. That part is easy for the kids. Kids are so resilient. I mean, it's so much more resilient than us, I think. And so that's why, yeah, you're right. The other stuff can be hard. But if you just focus on those relationships and build them, get these kids to trust you, then the other stuff comes naturally.
This reminds me of, I had a coffee date this week with a friend of mine who is writing her dissertation in music ed. And she's doing her dissertation work. I hope I'm allowed to say this. I'm sure I am. But she's basically doing her dissertation work on middle school, the middle school perspective on teacher care.
Ooh, I need to see this.
So rather than saying, because everything on, you know, all of the literature on caring and mutual respect in classrooms is from the teacher perspective. No one is actually asking the students, what does it feel like when you know teachers care about you? And what was really interesting, because I thought that was really interesting, and I'm going to open my phone here for a second. So I thought that was really interesting, and I was like, wait, I tend to think I'm a very caring teacher that shows that, but I've literally never asked. Mm-hmm. I've never asked. So of course, being me and being someone that when I see something I have not done that I want to do, I just immediately do that thing. We use the Band app for my group. And in my small group, I posted the other night about that. And I said, it of course ticked my wondering brain. And I told her I would ask you, what is it that a teacher, or if you'd like more specifically, a music / choir teacher does that make you feel seen or cared for? And the first, and like, all of these, you know, when they notice if I'm uncomfortable and acknowledge my hard work, if they take time to notice or check on me specifically, maybe not in front of the whole group, but just like acknowledging that I exist in that space at the same time as everyone else in some way.
Yeah.
When the teacher values every stage a student might be at and wants to help the whole class be better and not only a couple of people. When they aren't dismissive and I feel like my school teachers never tell me they're proud of me or if it matters that I'm in class or not. So, I mean, just like, just understanding that we have lives too, you know, like it's just so interesting. Oh, this one was really interesting. Be direct. Don't talk around an issue, but address it directly. It's a lot more productive, giving the students valuable feedback to work upon. And in the case of musical ensembles, produces a better performance.
Wow.
Like, these are the things that from my high schooler's perspective show that I care. And I can look at that list and say, okay, like, yeah, like I'm doing that. But it just narrows my focus.
Yes.
To be able to say, like, this is how they feel cared and seen. And why do you think they show up? Because I got to be honest, I have a new article coming out pretty shortly from Chorus Connection. And one of the things I talk about in that article is the culture of should and being in that dark gray cloud of I should know this and I don't and I'm not good enough and blah, 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 blah. And like, would you sign up for an hour every other day of a class where you felt like you were living in that cloud? Because I absolutely would not do that thing.
Yeah. That's brilliant. And first of all, kudos to you for fostering an environment where these kids, you're like, hey, I have a question for you. And they engage with you and give you this great feedback because not everybody has that with their kids. So that's amazing. And
well,
you know,
my kids are the most amazing humans that I've ever met in my entire life. So I just have to say it's because they're amazing.
Something that if I'm reflecting on my best practice is something I need to improve on versus something I think I do well is I have a military background and I'm a kid. Just my own personal feeling about life is I am a kid who has always wanted to be part of a winning team. I've never wanted to be the best of or the person with the spotlight, but I wanted to be part of an amazing team. And I, my whole life, if you look at my pattern, it's been chasing that goal. And so I'm very team focused in my choirs. I'm very group focused. And I got to be honest, like my big, the thing I need to improve on is the individual connections. And something that I'm working really hard toward right now is just like you said, your kid's saying, when you notice I'm uncomfortable and that I need something and you address that, is so important to kids that age. And, you know, it's the one thing that is probably the most powerful thing for middle school, high school age kids.
It is. And, you know, some people, I'm a little lucky because I am that way. I am just that way. I can look at a room full of people and I can remember not only your name, I'm very good at names. I am excellent at names. And I it just is, you know, I'm excellent at names and I'm excellent at remembering something about you. So for example, I know that I'm going to have a kid in a rehearsal tonight who had a choir concert yesterday. And I'm already planning on asking them how that choir concert went. Right. And so for me, that's something that's very easy. But something I've told people is, you know, just keep a notebook. Just jot down and make sure, you know, it's a private notebook, but jot down the conversations you had. Jot down, you know, kids want to have inside jokes. They want to have that moment where you can look at them. I mean, not just kids, humans. Where you can look at them out of the corner of your eye and just sparkle for a minute. And they know what you're thinking and you know what they're thinking.
Yeah.
And when you can land that a little bit with this kid here and this kid here and this kid here, then it just starts to build and you know what's going to happen. And sometimes you have to call it out. You know, we've got this song that we're doing right now that's really hip. And the tenors and basses have this thing that goes, have this big tenor bass moment that goes, if only through force of will. And like right in the center, I have a kid named Will. So like every time we rehearsed it, I just like point at that kid named Will. And like, so now when I'm conducting on that beat one, I like throw in a point into my conducting gesture to make sure that I'm pointing at Will, because if only through force of will. And like, it's so stupid. But you got to think to yourself, how much does that kid look forward to that one moment?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that individual connection is just so, so, so important. And it's just what people have to do. But we're here. We're here. We decided to even start this episode, which now we're 30 minutes into. So we're kind of what we said we were going to talk about. See, this is what Eric and I could do. We can just talk forever. Mm-hmm. And I love that about us, is inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
So pop quiz, if you had to define inclusivity in a choir environment, how would you define it?
Here's where I want to, if you don't mind, here's where I want to go with inclusivity. When I was, I'm going to tell you another story. So when I was a young lad and I thought I was going to be the world's next great trombone player, I spent every last dime I had to fly up to New York City and to meet one of the world's most famous trombonists and get private lessons from him. With the hopes of maybe he'll pick me to be in his studio and to go to his fancy school in New York. And I practically worshiped the ground this guy walked on. He was just, in my mind, such an important figure for me. And when I finally got to the school, there was just a miscommunication of some kind, and I was not standing in the right spot, and he had to come and find me. And this guy dressed me down so hard and embarrassed me in front of everybody. And really, really just crushed me. I was like, I was maybe 17 or 18 years old. I was a kid who had these big dreams and I was meeting one of my heroes. And because I wasn't standing in the right place, he just crushed me. And then because I'm a glutton for punishment, I kept coming back to him. So I was just hoping to get his approval one day. Mm. So there, I had a series of times I went up and I kept taking lessons from him. Maybe he'll like me this time. And every time I went up there, there was some other really uncomfortable, weird thing that happened. Mm. And I realized something about this dude that has stuck with me forever. And that's, he forgot a really valid principle in life, which is you could be the world's greatest trombone player, but you're still just a trombone player.
Absolutely.
And I just felt like the ego got out of control. Mm. And it really has informed me as a teacher and just as a person and a colleague. I'm somebody who wants to be, this is what inclusivity means to me. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your pedigree is. I don't care where you went to school. I don't care like what kind of musician you fancy yourself as being. I care about how you treat people and how you treat your students. And I think that, you know, students tend to pick up on that. And so I believe inclusivity means modeling what you want that to look like for your kids by being an amazing colleague and bringing in more people. And I feel like in a time in education where we could say we're in a bit of a crisis, people are leaving in droves, using, you know, kind of like just being, I don't know, gatekeeping, not providing space for everybody who wants to come in and do this job, or every student who wants to come into your space and be a member of your choir, is damaging in the long run. And I think we all just need to remember that we're but humble people who love music and love choir and want to impart that on our students. And so that's just a really important part of me and who I am, and what inclusivity means to me.
Yeah, what you said reminded me of a quote that I'm going to look up quickly. Yes, what you said reminded me of this quote from Pete Seeger. The easiest way to avoid wrong notes is to never open your mouth and sing. What a mistake that would be.
So funny. That's hanging in my wall in my
Stop
room.
Stop it. Love that. No, it's so good. And. You know, it's true. Like, I think to myself all the time, and I was just talking to my friend the other day, my friend who's getting the dissertation, and she was talking about how she, when she was a young teacher, you know, she was very, you know, notes and rhythms, and you got to get the notes and rhythms right, because you come from college and like everyone got the notes and rhythms right. And you're like, I'm going to create my collegiate experience that was so inspiring to me with these tiny children in front of me. And then you're like, wait, that actually doesn't work, because when we were in college, we weren't in high school.
Mm.
So like, just a reminder, high school and college are different, and they shouldn't be doing the same things or the same repertoire. It's fine. But you know, high schoolers are still children. But she was saying that after, she was teaching middle school at the time, and she had asked, it was like her second year of teaching, and she had asked the students for feedback on the concert, after the concert. And one of the students wrote, I just don't know why you get like so hung up on like if we're singing the right note or not. Like, it's just a note. And it's like, God bless the children, because
there's so much wisdom in what that kid just said.
Like, it's just a note. Like, it is literally just like la. So like, I say something like to my students all the time. It's something I say a lot, is like, nobody ever died singing a wrong note. Like, you're going to be fine. Like, if you go and sing a wrong note, like, you're going to be okay. There is no damage done. Like, the world is still okay. And there's something to your story that really kind of hits home with me. And I don't like talking about the pandemic. I don't like going backwards and just like unhashing this over and over and over again. But I think one of the things that we as a field did really poorly during the pandemic was balance the fact that, like, choir is important, but it's also just choir.
Yep.
And we did a really poor job at balancing that. In my opinion, you know, we kind of said choir is the most important and we, you know, blah, 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 or the most dangerous or the most when it's just choir. And one of the things my organization did, and this was a tough call for me at the time. And I sort of can't believe I did it. I hear a lot of our choral colleagues and, you know, to each their own. I'm a big fan of to each their own. You do what's best for your organization, but they're like, you know, we kept going the whole time. We kept singing the whole time. We were in a parking garage in, you know, 28 degree weather with hot cocoa in masks and 17,000 feet apart, but we kept choir going. And I'm like, really? Because the spring of 2021, I didn't. We tried some virtual programming in fall of 2020. It was fine, but my teachers were exhausted and my students were exhausted and they didn't want to be on the computer anymore. So I said, okay, then we'll just not do anything for a while. And like, hopefully this thing will end and then we can do chorus again.
Well, and guess what? So you did it differently than other people and there's no right or wrong way. And I think that's a big message of inclusivity with me is that there is no right or wrong way to do this thing. And, you know, we all just have to be our best and do our best and keep showing up for our kids. And, you know, I want to qualify what we mean when we say it's just choir, because I'm, you know, I can only imagine that maybe somebody out there is going, it's just choir, but it's choir. And it's like, but I think the point in it, and it's like, it's trying to not take yourself or what you do ever too seriously. Live a life of humility, be humble, check your ego, make sure that you know why you do what you do. It's just choir, baby. Or something I like to say to my kids is if I'm doing a guest conducting gig and I've only got 2 days with kids for an honor choir, I'll tell them, hey, it's okay. Say it's okay. Turn to a neighbor and say it's okay. Like if there's something wrong or the note's not right, just it's okay. And the kids love it because they're, especially in the high stakes situation like an honor choir, I think there's this expectation that we've got to be perfect. And for the guest and conductor to go, it's okay. Turn and look to a neighbor and tell them right now, it's okay. It's so disarming and relaxing. And you get the kids to a new level when they feel, okay, I don't have to be perfect. It's just choir. Like we're just here because we love singing. That's it.
I love the word disarming. I love that word. And I just love that you just used it. And I'm just like bathing in that word right now because, you know, our kids show up with these backpacks and these backpacks have rocks and feathers and stories inside of them. And, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, sort of like the old way, like the pre-pandemic sort of the when I was in high school way is like, check it at the door. You're here. Like you're here now. Check it at the door. Like you leave that outside because you're here now and you got to give your 17,000% and you got to like just leave your worries at the door because we're here in this safe space. And for better or for worse, right? Like that doesn't work anymore because that's not actually inclusive. That's saying you have to put on armor. You have to leave it at the door. You can't carry those things with you. But we're doing right now, I had a great conversation with my co-director who is a genius in his own right, like a true, true genius. And we were talking because last Sunday night we're doing Famine Song. Which is just absolutely lovely. And I spent a couple of hours in research and my students and I spent about 20 minutes at the previous rehearsal before Sunday talking about the famines in Somalia and the militia in Somalia and how those people and empathizing and talking about the history and the cultural context of where this came from and the fact that Maura Smiley and Vida When they wrote the arrangement, they used the lamenting singing styles from Bosnia as an empathetic way for women to connect with this story from around the world. I mean, it's just like gorgeous, right? So we had this great big conversation. And then on Sunday night, we had a rehearsal. And I decided in this rehearsal of it, I'm doing some very light staging, but I told the students it's really important that we remember that we are empathizing with emotions and intentions. We are not characters. This is the difference between musical theater, right, and performing important choral work from a cultural context standpoint, is that we are not acting like the people of Somalia. That's not what we're right. doing. We're not acting. We're empathizing with those emotions and engaging the audience who we are going to give context on this piece with those emotions. Mm-hmm. And so in an effort to do that, I had them come up with some words. And every time we approached a new section, we replaced every single dynamic in the piece with an emotion instead. Because the important part isn't that it's quiet or that it's loud. It's why is it quiet and why is it loud?
That's good.
So instead, well, I'm not saying, and kids would ask, well, are we going to crescendo there? And I said, I don't know. What? Why would we do that? What's the emotion behind it? I'm not interested in the word crescendo. I'm interested in the word desperation. And, you know, for, again, I've said it before. I will say it 75,000 times. I literally have the best children in the entire world. I love them with my entire heart. I cannot even tell you. But they began to just raise their hand and I would ask them questions. Why? What is this here? What is this here? What emotion are you feeling? And they're throwing out these things that are just absolutely brilliant. And they're talking and, you know, 30 minutes of the hour rehearsal went by and I looked down and I was like, oh boy. But the intensity with which they performed, and now I'm forgetting why I was telling this story. My original point. I know. I can't remember my original point, but you know, these students were so engaged and so intentional. Ah, that's right, because my co-conductor is a genius. And so Jason, I was texting Jason after the rehearsal and I was talking to him, and I had a weekend and a half. And I was like, I can't believe that rehearsal that was so powerful and so intentional and so lovely and so everything I believe about music came out of a weekend where like I just sort of felt like crap all weekend about different things. And he said, well, you know, I think you were channeling an energy, but kids are channeling an energy right now. They are in a world where they don't have much choice and things are happening to them. And, you know, they're getting these active shooter calls and all of this, and they have no control, but they want control. And they channeled that energy. And had I told those students, check it at the door, they wouldn't have had that empathy of those emotions to be able to express so intentionally the music that they were singing, right? And so, that was a really long way and a really long story, but I think it's important to remember that, like, we have to invite them. Part of inclusivity for me is inviting them in wholeheartedly.
Well said. And I check it at the door, you said, you know, doesn't work anymore. I wonder if it ever worked. And I think that one of the things to come out of the pandemic is this phrase that I just keep saying over and over again to myself, which is innovate or die. So if you want your program, if you want your program to survive, or if you want your kids to stay engaged in what you're doing, you've got to figure out how to innovate. And I think that one of the ways we have gotten better is this leave it at the door thing is a thing of the past. But another thing you said that was really interesting to me is, you know, you kind of were talking about how this rehearsal and time's running out of the rehearsal, and then you look up at the clock and you realize, oh my God, we've been talking all this time, is something every director has, you know, has that moment of, oh my God, what do we do? But something I always want to say is time spent building relationships, making deeper connections to the music is never time wasted. And that's the one thing is I think sometimes I will just, I'll walk into my space and I've got a plan, but then the kids have another plan. And I'm just like, let's talk. And I have a student teacher right now. And so I'm very mindful of what does this look like to her, you know? And I'm like really in my head sometimes about why I do what I do. Mm. But something that I just don't apologize for is the time spent that building relationships and just having kids talk. Sometimes that's better than anything you were going to accomplish from measure 15 to 25.
And ultimately, if my kids, I would rather my kids not know how the notes go than not have the opportunity to express those emotions that they needed so desperately to express in a room full of people that they trust to express them with. Like, what? Excuse me? Like, that is so much more important. And granted, yes. And this is where things get tricky in when you say a people first approach to singing. Sometimes people, I get the response of, oh, people first. So that must mean, right, that like your rehearsals are a wrecking area and all you're doing is fun and games, right? Or, you know, your kids are talking all the time. My kids are talking all the time, literally all of the time. Like, it's fine. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. Like, it gets annoying, like, if I'm in the middle of a role, but like, they don't have to like shut up every 12 seconds. The goal is literally to get them to make noise. So why would I tell them to shut up every 4 seconds? Like, I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. But like, people who walk into my classroom, I'll never forget the principal I had that walked in and went, well, they know what's going on, and you know what's going on, but no one else would know what's going on. And I'm like, I'm okay with that, bro. Like, I'm okay with that. But we have to. I lost my train of thought.
No, well, I. No, I love what you said. The people first approach to singing. Look,
that's what it is. Yes.
But so go for it. Sorry.
Go ahead. No. I just wanted to say before I let you jump in, like people sometimes say like, you know, it's people first. It doesn't mean that we suck at singing. It doesn't mean that I have to teach them the music, because the fact that they could sing that repertoire on Sunday night from memory and really well, and they knew how their notes and rhythms went, that was very important to the fact that they could do the thing. It just means people first. Music can come very closely behind, but people first.
Well, first of all, you and I are very much in alignment with that, and I got a lot to say about that. But also, if we're tying this back to inclusivity, there's also space in the choir world for the other thing. If you are somebody who, as a director, is so motivated by the intrinsic value of music as having extrinsic benefits to your kids, and you have a music first or literacy first or education first approach, there's no one saying you're wrong. But for me, and what makes sense to me and what makes sense to my kids, from having done this for 10 years or so, is first of all, people first. What keeps me in choir and not seeking band or any other job is because choir is about so much more than singing. It's about so much more than technique. Mm-hmm. It's about so much more than reading Western notation. There's something about singing that's primordial, that goes back. It's so deep. And as somebody who did not grow up singing, I have like a childish love and wonder for what music can do, what singing can do, that I wonder if people who grew up in singing still have. I'm sure you do, but I look at singing as something so much more than learning the music. And so for me, it's passion over perfection every time. And I would rather have a group of kids who are singing with all their hearts and their bodies are into it and they're moving and they're just giving it everything they've got. I don't care if the notes are perfect. I care. And I've had so many performances where if you listen to a recording, you're like, ooh, okay, yeah, that's I'm not submitting that to any like honor choir, but man, if you were in the room at the time that they sang it, the energy was off the charts and the kids just walked, everybody in there had a different perception viewing it live than you will listening to it, because mm-hmm. it was just a whole different thing. So passion over perfection every time, people first all the way, for sure.
Absolutely. And the more that you can dig into the people, the better they get. I mean, I have a student this semester that's new to me, new to our group, a junior, and he joined us in like October. Okay. And like 6 weeks went by and I was like, I don't really get you. Like some vocal things here and there. And I'm like, how do I teach this kid? How do I mm-hmm. teach this kid? I'm unaware. And it's funny. It's the same kid that said, you know, be direct. And the funny thing is now in April, I know that. So around December, I kind of figured out like, wait a minute. I know what this kid needs. This kid doesn't need me to say, oh, you know, basses I'm hearing a little bit of. Nah, he wants me to say like, bro, you were flat. You need to do this to fix it, right? And then he does the thing to fix it and he gets better. And then all of a sudden the past, like, so I started that in like December. I was like, okay, I get it. He just wants me to tell him the thing. He doesn't want me to beat around the bush. He wants me to tell him how to get better. And that's how he wants to learn. And not every kid wants to learn like that, right? Some kids that are more sensitive, they might not. And that's relationship building too, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, hey, how was your vacation that you took? It's also like, okay, I know how you want to learn. I know how your brain operates, so I can communicate with you the way you need to be communicated with to get better at this thing. Mm. And it's going to be different than the guy next to you. Because if I said that to the guy next to you, he would literally like, you know, just fall down and be like sobbing, right?
Right.
Because directness isn't for everyone.
Right.
In fact, for a lot of our nice, sensitive, loving cultures, you know, choir singer souls, directness can be difficult. But for this student, it's not. And as soon as I started doing that, I started giving him that direct feedback. Nope. Lighter. And, you know, sing it this way. Do this. Change this. Right. And all of a sudden, the past like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I've just seen him continue to grow and grow and grow as a singer. Digging into the culture of the group more, excited about maybe coming to extra rehearsals. And I'm like, that's amazing. Mm. Right. And that's how we have to kind of see our students. We have to see them as these individual creatures who need these small things from us. And when you can have that people first philosophy, all of a sudden those moments of passion that you're talking about, musically, they will just start to get better and better and better.
Mm, yeah.
You know, especially if you've only been at a place for like 3 years. It takes time to build these things. It takes time. I mean, every single concert that I do with South Shore, I'm like, man, that group sounds so much better. My small group of 30 sounds so much better right now than they did at the January concert. And they sounded good at the January concert, but they sound so much better right now. And it's because I've looked at that kid and I've said, okay, I know how to work with you now.
Right.
And so he's actually getting better because of the people first approach to singing. It doesn't have to do with how well I teach the entire group how to sight read or how to make an ooh vowel. He needs something different from me. Mm-hmm. And when I can give him something different because he comes first, not the music.
Right.
This is the kind of kid that maybe in another world, a teacher might say, you know, oh, you know, we need you to just like sing softer or shove in a corner because they don't know how to like, you know, work with this kid. And I'm like, all right, like, let me figure out how to work with you. And it's a little unorthodox. And like, I can see sometimes the other kids, when I give him feedback, like they kind of like tighten up a little bit because it is really direct. But they're also learning, no, this is what my dad needs.
Right. Yeah. You said so many good things there. So something that I do is I give a presentation to conferences called the Middle School Survival Guide.
Nice.
And one of the things I talk about is what, like, a pyramid structure of what I think a healthy middle school program looks like, and the base of it, and what could take you years to accomplish, is just getting buy-in and building relationships. And one of my favorite things to do is, and well, like you said, it just takes time to figure out what those kids need and how each kid operates. But then also, the only measuring stick that anybody should be using, at least at a middle school level, is it better than it was? Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, and I mean, if you're putting all this pressure on yourself as an educator in general to be perfect on your first year and dot all your I's and cross all your T's, you're just setting yourself up for failure. But if you just go, hey, is it better than it was last concert? Is it better than we were a year ago? And just slowly move that goalpost, then you're succeeding. And it all starts with the individual kid and building the program by understanding what they need and giving them what they need, and addressing that makes the whole better.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I think that's so great. I think this is a great place to wind down and hit you with my end of episode quick fire questions.
Okay, let's do it.
But before we do that, in your like crazy announcer voice, I need you to say end of episode quick fire questions.
End of episode quick fire questions.
I love that. Great. Hired. You're hired. I might just like clip that out and put it in every single time.
All
right. Although that sounds like a lot of editing, and I don't have any sponsors. I just do this because it's really fun. Do, do, do. Pay for it out of my pocket.
Hey, everybody, sponsor this podcast. It is awesome. Like, let's get some sponsors for you for sure.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I kind of like the fact that it's just because I love it. You know, and then I don't have to ever, you know, deal with anything.
I hear you.
So first quick fire question, what is one quirky thing about you?
Oh man, I know that you do these quick fires, and I listened to a couple podcasts. I was like, okay, I'm going to be ready for this. And now I forget. okay. Thank you. Okay. Here we go. This might've been what I originally thought I was going to say. I'm an avid history nerd, like big, huge history nerd. If I wasn't going to be a music teacher, I would for sure be a history teacher. I love history.
Awesome. Cool. Love that for you. I am terrible at history. I am like really bad at it. I just can't remember anything. Number two, and I get in trouble for this one, so I like to give it lots of qualifications. Favorite choral piece. Which we understand could possibly change with depending on who you're working on and the time of year and how you're feeling on that day, but something you like that is one of or your favorite choral pieces.
I do remember this question, and I don't. So my qualification back to that is I don't love choral pieces so much as choral composers.
Okay,
and
fair.
So like right now, my two like hot button choral composers to look out for are Rena Esmail and Tracy Wong. If y'all aren't hip to their music yet, oh my gosh. And I've got, I have a very large Indian population in my community, and having someone like Rena Esmail actually writing this amazing quality music that reflects Indian culture it's such a game changer for our kids. And I just like, if Rena hears this, please write more, because we need so much more of it. And yeah, so they're my two like faves right now. Wabulon, gonna shout out Tracy Wabulon, and Jam are like two killer pieces. Tadakita for Rena is just like, oh my gosh. So those are the pieces that are really exciting me right now.
I love that. I was just adjudicating this weekend and heard Tadakita. It's been on my list. I haven't done it yet, but it is on my list, and super, super cool stuff. That's just so engaging in the culture in a respectful way, and gives us something to jump off of and to be able to say, look, you are invited to the party. And I don't like that I just said that, because that says that we are the ones inviting into the party, and that's not fair. So I'm going to just back up on that and just say the party is for all of us together, and I'm glad that those kind of pieces exist. So good. All right. So number three, Your favorite hobby outside of choir?
My favorite hobby outside of choir is reading. I'm a big reader and I'm a big worker outer. So I love to, I'm in the gym a lot and I'm just trying to focus on my health. I'm an outdoors guy. Where I live is so cool because I'm 45 minutes from DC and all the culture that DC right. has to offer. But 45 minutes west of me is the Shenandoah National Park. And it's just some of the most gorgeous land you can see. And so I just, if I'm not going east into the city for something, I'm going out west and getting away from it all. So I love being outside.
Ah, that's great. I love it too. So good. Do you have pets or kids or both?
I don't have pets. I have a daughter. I have a 15-year-old daughter, Addison. I love her so much. No pets. I want pets, but my life is not conducive to pet ownership right now. So my in-laws have a beautiful spot of land and a black lab. And I always say, my wife and I always say, when we can give the life that that dog has to another dog, then we will have a dog. But right now I'm living that townhouse life in DC, so, or the DC area. So nope.
That's okay. You know, I love that. And you have a kid and that also counts for something. I mean, I don't have one, but you know, I hear they're pretty cool sometimes.
Sometimes.
I like to tell people I don't have one that I birthed, but I have ones that I've taught for 8 years and it basically counts.
Totally. I mean, that's what you call your kids, right? They're your kids, right?
They are. Oh, they are absolutely my children. Like I make some of them text me when they get home because they're driving to rehearsal now and I've known them since they were 10. And I'm like, I can't handle the fact that there's going to be 35 minutes where something could happen to you.
Oh my gosh.
Like I have to know that. Like I am a parent to you. Like I just have to know. Okay. Number five. I love this one. So this is your choice.
Okay.
One choral tradition we should throw away immediately, or one choral tradition we should keep forever?
Yeah, I thought about this one because I knew it was coming. And
cheater, pumpkin eater.
I know. I'm sorry. But you saw, even with me knowing it was coming, how bad I was at the first question. So I wonder what the future of musical assessment should look like. Whether you call it festival or assessment or UIL, I think, or something like that in Texas, just, where my personal philosophy and where I came from was very not into this idea of standardized testing for choirs. I've come to embrace it as part of what I have to do. And I've come to find serious value in it for my program, and my kids always grow tremendously as a result of it. But there's always that leftover residual, you got this score, but they got this score, but you this and that. And it feels more divisive in a lot of ways than inclusive. And I wonder if we should think about just a big party where everybody comes together and sings for each other and we just love on each other, instead of a system of holding every choir to the same standard. And then if you're this, you know, I don't know. I have a love-hate relationship with that. So maybe that's a choral tradition I would say not throw away, but let's, as a choir, let's think about it. Let's reinvent it.
I think there's lots of people thinking about that now, or at least I hope it is. You know, I have been on both sides. I've been on the adjudicated and the adjudicator. And I just adjudicated a festival this past weekend. The big choral festival in Massachusetts. And, you know, I'm looking at some of the pieces that we're doing. I'm looking at my rubric. I don't know that I agree with the rubric, but I got to go with the rubric. And I'm looking at the kids and I'm like, how can I help? How can I inspire? Like, I'm not really interested in slamming you. I'm
right.
interested in inspiring you, but also like I have this rubric. And so like, it's the same thing, like love, hate, you know, like I don't think it's a bad thing to go and to perform for new people. But I also look at, you know, these educators and like, they're looking at this music, and you know, you're in high school, so you feel like you have to do SATB DVC music in order to get a high score at festival. And it's like, but who says that, right? Like, who says that? Like, why can't we, you know, if you've got a high school choir of 11 kids, maybe you should be doing two-part music. Maybe you should, you know, like, and that's okay. Like, there's no, I don't say that as in, like, maybe you should be doing two-part music because you're less than. It's again, it's the people first. Like, are you looking at the world and imposing the world on your students? Or are you looking at your students and creating a world with them?
Yeah, and just tying it back to the inclusivity part. I mean, I've seen this assessment thing just become some kind of a barrier or dividing line between different programs. And I want to be inclusive. I love you. I want you to love me. I want us all to love each other. We're all just here for the same thing. You know, I have also adjudicated and I've heard some kind of similar situations where a high school group might be programming a piece that I'm thinking is beyond what your 16 kids should be doing. But then again, I also just hate judging. Like I hate saying maybe you shouldn't do this piece, you know, because it's like if that means something to you and that's the value and you find value in it that maybe I don't see this one time I hear it, then that's cool too. So that's again, it's just inclusive, baby. It's okay, you know. So like I don't like a system where I have to sit down with a rubric and look and then give a kid a score. It's rough, you know.
Maybe I'm riffing here. I am totally riffing, but maybe what sparked my brain as you were talking is maybe it needs to be less about a rubric and more about a conversation. Maybe it needs to be more of a conversation. Maybe, you know, as the adjudicator, we go and we have a discussion with the teacher and we say, why did you choose this repertoire? What was it about this repertoire that you chose? And, you know, maybe the educator will say, well, you know, my kids heard this piece last year and they just really wanted to do it. And I know we're a little understaffed, but like they were so fired up about it that I couldn't stand in their way.
I
Or
love that.
maybe they'll say, I heard it at festival last year and I really want my kids to be at this level. And then we can continue to have these philosophical conversations and guide and help offer suggestion or another way of thinking. So maybe it's less about your repertoire and I give you a score of 1 to 5 because of me and who I am and my background and what I'm superimposing on a group I don't know. Or you and I have a conversation about it. And then I listen to your group and then I clinic your group. And I work together with you to clinic your group to, first of all, back you up as their teacher.
Or what I also like is going back to what you said about that high school group that might need to be doing two part. If we removed this stigma, this to, you know, to be a successful high school choir director, your 11 kids must be doing SATB music. And use this rubric to whatever. If we removed that and we said, hey, it's not about a score or a rubric, it's about a conversation and it's a festival. We're all going to come together and we're going to sing. I wonder how freeing that might be and how much great music could be made as a result. So I don't know. I mean,
And
look, I
how
know that.
much more kids will learn skills because kids don't learn skills if the music's too hard.
I
They
know.
learn the song, they don't learn the skill.
I can just see people listening to this episode and going, but you know, assessment works for me. And I get it. Assessment works for me too. And my kids have grown as well. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, like, if we're talking about traditions that we're just doing to do, let's maybe post-pandemic, it is time to start thinking about innovating or dying. And how can we, you know, glow up?
Love that. All right, my final quick fire question, and then I'll end this and then turn it around and edit it, and boom, it's going to be in the hearts and the minds of the people.
The hearts and the minds.
Kills me every time. So somebody is listening to this episode and they are super inspired because you are a super inspiring person and they want to be more people first in their approach in a small way starting tomorrow. What is one small change that they could make immediately that would help with that?
Stop trying to be the director you think you're supposed to be and start being the director that you can be. And I guess, and start with relationships, right? I mean, I think we all start our careers trying to be this amalgamation of all these different people who have influenced us in our lives. And then you've got your professor barking in your ear that you've got, the kids must be able to do this and the intrinsic value of this and literacy that. And I think that instead, just take the time to build relationships with your kids, get to know each other, get to know them, have them get to know each other. And if you start there, you're going to be blown away by what these kids will give back to you. And that's where it's at.
That is 100% where it's at. Thank you, my friend, for spending some time and some wisdom and some knowledge with me and my listeners. Have a wonderful rest of your spring break. Enjoy. Sleep. Do a lot of nothing. Go out to the woods and take a walk.
I slept over 10 hours the other day.
Yes, friend.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. This has been a lot of fun. And I could talk to you forever as we learned in Nationals. And I hope that we get to talk a lot more in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, friend. Have a great, great week.
Woo!
Start with relationships. If there's anything you can take away from Eric, you know that that is so, so, so important. Start with the relationships. It's all about the relationship human to human, of singer to singer or director to singer, but really just human to human. I hope you enjoyed this episode today, and check back next Thursday for another exciting episode. Have a great week. I don't know. I'm just really joyful today. I don't know what it is. Have a great week, friends. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Choral Connectivity, A People-First Approach to Singing. Again, I'm your host, Kirsten Oberoi, and I would love to connect with you and your story. Find us on Facebook or Instagram or on our website at choralconnectivity.com. If you love the content and feel inspired today, click on the link in the show notes to buy me a coffee to help with production costs, hosting, and possibly to actually buy me a coffee. A special shout out to my student, George Potenza, for allowing me to use his music in this season of the podcast. Thank you for listening. And as always, continue being inspiring, innovative, caring, committed, and passionate about bringing singing to all people.